The world premiere of the musical Love and Hate Nation is running at Two River Theater in Red Bank through December 1st with book, music, and lyrics by Tony Award nominee Joe Iconis. Iconis thrilled audiences at Two River and then on Broadway with the sensation Be More Chill. Love and Hate Nation is set in a national reformatory for girls. That's where the character Sheila Nail falls in love with a 16-year-old in that facility. Sheila Nail is portrayed by Kelly McIntyre in this turbulent rock romance. I had a chance to sit down with McIntyre and Joe Iconis at Two River Theater.
Besides the world, is it ready for two girls going steady? I'll escape and chill myself away.
I feel her there.
I stop my stare. Now my pulse is going boom, boom, boom.
Sheila, I think, is a bona fide badass. She, you know, wears a lot of walls and, you know, she's got the leather jacket, she's got the whole getup, but I think that I relate to her a lot because I think deep down she is someone who wants to be seen and heard just as much as anyone else does, and I think she just has a harder time admitting that. I think that she, you know, sees people for who they truly are because I think she fully understands herself even at a young age, and I think that even though, you know, she's kind of a hardcore chick, I think she's one of the most relatable girls that are in our cast of people.
And this happens in the early 1960s in Connecticut, mm-hmm. and in a place that you normally don't see in a Broadway show, and characters that you don't normally talk about. And that's something that Joe Iconis is all about, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think that all of my musicals that I've written and a lot of my, you know, sort of standalone songs focus on characters or types of people who normally might not get musical theater work written about them. And even in that, I tend to gravitate towards musical moments that are like these tiny little sort of personal moments that sort of get blown up into huge proportions. But I just like writing about things that others might consider, you know, mundane or normal or not worthy of attention. It's just sort of my thing.
The character of Sheila Nail that Kelly McIntyre portrays, how do you select somebody like Kelly? How does that process work? A lot of people don't really know, you know, how that all begins and how much research goes into it. Tell us about that.
For Love and Hate Nation in particular, the cast is kind of a collection of people who I've known for years and years, like Lauren Marcus or Tatiana Wexler, and people who did the previous sort of workshop production at Penn State, like Amina Faye and Lena Skeel. And then it's people who I met through auditions, whose work I did not know at all, and Kelly is one of those people. And she's, you know, truly, she's someone who walked into the room, and I was familiar with her name, but I had never seen her before. She walked into the room, and it was like, oh, that's the character. That's the character that I wrote. And it's, you know, I'm someone who I gravitate towards actors who have inherent personality, who have charisma to them. I tend to not be into the sort of like, sort of sparkly, clean, what we think of as like a sort of quote unquote typical musical theater actor. And Kelly just so had her own vibe and her own spirit. And that's what I initially hang on to. And then it was like, oh, she also just so happens to be a really great actor. And then, oh, she just so happens to be a really incredible singer. And then even in that, like, oh, this woman's voice is unbelievable. Her voice is also really personality driven and specific. And it's like, I've never heard someone who sings like Kelly McIntyre. And that's what I want for, you know, any of my characters, but especially for Sheila Nail. It's like, I knew we wanted someone whose voice felt like it could do so many different things and was surprising and was, you know, aggressive, but also really warm. And she just has that, she's, you know, it's, I mean, she's sitting right next to me, so it's strange to talk about her in this way. But I mean, she's, anyone who sees this show, I mean, any smart person, and even some of the dumb people who see the show, it's impossible to not look at her and be like, oh my gosh, I'm seeing a star. I'm seeing a literal star in front of me in this role.
National Reformatory for Girls, a setting for a love story, Kelly?
Of course. I mean, where else would a love story start? I mean, I think that it's so important in 2019 today to hear the story that is that takes place in the 1960s, because these girls in the National Reformatory for Girls in our show are so young, you know, age 16 to 18 years old, and they're so unapologetic with their feelings, and you know, they definitely have to be low key about how they're feeling, because at the time society was so against what they believed in, and they believed that they loved each other. These women, they loved each other. These young girls had feelings of love for each other, and they had to keep that under wraps. But I find it so inspiring that this story, you know, shows two young women being true to themselves and admitting, in a time where it was extremely challenging to admit, that they have romantic feelings for each other. And sadly enough, today there are still like issues like that, which is, you know, not okay. But I think that today this story is, even though it's in juvie hall, we can't all relate to that, but we can all relate to a time where we were, you know, silent with our feelings and didn't have the balls enough to admit it. And these, you know, delinquents are just doing it in front of our eyes in the 1960s. So what are we waiting for today? I think it's the perfect setting for a love story.
And you reveal that love in the song, Oh Well, a beautiful duet that you do with Amina. Tell us how your mind, what are you thinking when you sing that song? When you go on the website, it's there for you to see. Mm-hmm. And yeah, yeah. Anybody that sees that's coming to Love and Hate Nation, I'm telling you right now, because it's your voices are outstanding.
Thank you. Yeah, Amina Faye is a star, like Joe said, being born before our very eyes. Just unbelievable voice, crazy, infectious personality. And I think that the song Oh Well is so relatable to so many people, because it isn't necessarily Susanna and Sheila saying I love you to each other. It's really the moment of the show where we get to see Susanna and Sheila say, okay, I'm admitting to myself that I feel this way. So the next step is to put these feelings into words and say it out loud. How do I do that? And I think similarly, like I said, we've all had those moments of just being like, I guess I feel this way. So like, what do I do next? And I think the song is so relatable, because even if it's not feelings of romance, it could be feelings of taking a next step in like your life or anything. You just take this, oh, well, leap of faith kind of thing. And, just like throw yourself into the deep end kind of. And I think we see two young teenagers literally throwing themselves like caution to the wind, just being their truest selves and the struggles that they feel within doing that.
Joe, when I see you performing in that video and watching everybody sing, you can really feel the intensity and what you expect in this musical. Now, you've come to expect greatness with the people that you work with. So has it been a more pressure, or is it a more confident that you know that you can maybe experiment more? How was the process after the success of Be More Chill?
Definitely there's an amount of pressure to the whole thing. I mean, listen, it's funny because I'm in a weird position in that, you know, obviously Be More Chill is a show that is loved by a great number of people. And obviously, you know, Be More Chill got to Broadway. However, I'm not Lin-Manuel Miranda. I'm not Pacek and Paul. I'm not a sort of universally, you know, acclaimed famous person who has had an unequivocal hit. I exist in a very sort of particular place in the grand scheme of theater things. And so I feel like I'm still trying to prove myself. You know, I've never had the experience of being able to have a victory lap after a show, because I've never had a show that's been an unmitigated triumph in the way that, you know, a show like a Hadestown or a Hamilton or Dear Evan Hansen just simply are. And so there's always that pressure with everything I do, where I'm trying to, you know, remain true to the art that I want to make, and I'm trying to do the best thing possible, but in the back of my head there's always this voice of like, you have to prove to these people that you're worthy of taking up the space that you do. And so it's a strange thing. I look forward to the day when I have an unmitigated hit, and then my next thing can just be like, oh, I'm just gonna be crazy and experiment and and not care about any of it. But I'm not there yet.
The humble Joe Iconis, who has written the book, music and lyrics for Love and Hate Nation, the Tony Award nominee, who is joining me here along with Kelly McIntyre, plays the role of Sheila Nail in this wonderful musical. I challenge you, though, you are bringing a whole new audience to theater, and that is something maybe more important than what you've just been talking about. Maybe not the snatch, but you are encouraging, you are inviting, and you are meeting the demands of a whole new audience.
Thank you for saying that, and I feel that. You know, I feel the people coming to my musicals who maybe either, you know, folks who have not been to a whole lot of musicals before. I've experienced that so much in the last year. People saying that, you know, Be More Chill was their first musical that they ever saw, which I love, but I love even more people who are theater people, be they, you know, young kids or older people who really are seeing themselves represented in the stuff that I'm doing, you know, and that is something that really, really, really thrills me. And I can't believe I'm lucky enough to be working in this field and making work that people respond to in that way.
Sheila Nail, the character that you portray, Kelly, in this, where do you get her from? Do you take a little bit of Janis Joplin? Do you take a little bit of Maureen? Do you take a little bit of Kelly? Or is this a whole new character for you?
Well, I definitely think it's a whole new character. However, you know, a lot of the times when I'm cast in a role, I think it's because I relate to them, and so I think it's a little bit of everyone that you just listed above, and like hundreds more, just especially myself, because, you know, Sheila is an outcast in some sense of the word, and people have a challenging time relating to her, and I think she has a challenging time placing herself in the boxes that are created, and in a medium like musical theater, which was created so clearly with a few boxes back when it started. And like the Golden Age musicals have such clear-cut types and typical characters. And, you know, as much as I admire the history of the art that I do, growing up and in school even, I saw no place for myself to be my authentic self on stage. I can play a character any day of the week you want me to and like memorize the lines and go on stage, but there are few characters that are available in musical theater, at least in my eyes, that are available to play that I related to. And when I read Love and Hate Nation, I found Sheila so captivating because she's authentically herself in no hard-ridged box. Like, whatever thing she's being held in is, like, fluid and, like, always moving and whatever. There's no right person to play Sheila. I think the person just has to be themselves. And so I relate to that 100%. And I think Janis Joplin was that way too. She just wanted to be authentic and she wanted to speak the truth and, you know, take no bullshit and speak no bullshit. And I think Sheila's the same way. And I think I'm the same way. And so having characters like Sheila and like Janis available in musical theater, at least to me, was eye-opening. And I know if I were to see this show as a young actress, like, it would have blown my mind.
It's also great timing, I think. I think audiences, as you mentioned, kids today, mm-hmm. being out of different boxes, as you say. I think Joe has picked a perfect time to introduce Love and Hate Nation.
I totally agree. And I think it's because our society, even though we have a long way to go, is accepting that there are, you know, differences in human beings, and that is the way it should be. And why would we pick such a boring path in life to all be similar and normal and, you know, one-dimensional, instead of embracing each other's quirks, true identities, choices. And Love and Hate Nation kind of touches on all of, like, these really prevalent issues today, and about sexuality and gender and relationships and race. And I think we do it in a very, or I think Joe does it, and we do it on stage every night in a very gentle and meaningful way. And so far, the feedback, at least to the girls in the show, from young audiences has been amazing and really, you know, warm and encouraging, because I think we're doing something right by, you know, shining a light on people that haven't seen themselves on the stage. And now is the time to do it, because everyone needs to be encouraged.
I don't think powerful and beautiful are always a part of a voice. You have both, fortunately for you. What was the song that you sang in second grade that got things started for Kelly McIntyre?
Well, the first thing I ever performed on stage, I was Annie in Annie, in the second grade. So I guess it was, maybe the song in Annie. And I wore like one of my dad's old sweaters, and it's on VHS somewhere in my parents' house. And it, you know, that was, everyone has their first show. I thought it was super fun, and I got to perform with my friends on stage. And, you know, then from then on, I just always wanted to sing.
And write, too. You've been involved in music since, really, you know, you carry that on through high school, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I started playing piano when I was in kindergarten, preschool, and started writing in high school. It was just kind of my outlet, aside from musical theater. I've always loved writing so much. And, you know, musical theater helps so much with that, because I think it's one of the most honest forms of writing music, because you can kind of just be, you know, very explanatory, and you can be forgiven for that because you're telling a story. And so I think it helped me in writing growing up, for my own music and for my band eventually. And yeah.
Joe, you have to, and you are, you're smiling as you hear her talk, because you've opened doors for somebody like Kelly to be a part of this wonderful show, to show not only her talent and her acting, but this is something that she's been passionate about all her life. So it has to give you a lot of satisfaction.
It does, but you know, for me, it's really the other way around. I feel like I can't believe that there are these creatures who have these skill sets and who are so specific and charismatic and brilliant. Who exist, who I get to collaborate with, who I get to have be in my show. Like, it makes me want to cry every night when I watch them. I just can't believe that these people exist and that I'm able to work with them. You know, so it's the honor is all mine, of course.
Very moving show, and in your big number, your big solo about the three different escapes that you try to do from in different ways, we won't give anything about that. But the song is definitely a powerful one. What do you want to say about that tune?
That tune is very special. I mean, it's definitely a little performance within itself. Sheila's entrance to the show is an 8-minute long number, and you really kind of get to see her walls that she has up right away. She's a storyteller, and she is cool, and she's a badass, and she tried to escape Juvie Hall. And then throughout the song, you get to see her peel away those layers and kind of really get down to her innards. So the audience gets to see Sheila right away, to her core.
Escape attempts of shit.
But lucky enough for them, they get to see Susanna and the other characters, like, discover Sheila throughout the show. So you kind of get her whole story right at the beginning, how she's honest with herself, but she hasn't figured out a way to be honest with everyone else yet. And it's also just the catchiest tune ever, and Joe wrote a good one.
So we know you have to go, but I did want to say, Kelly, I think we will expect to see Sheila Neal long past this run here at Two River Theater.
I hope so. I think it's an amazing show, and everyone in the cast, I can speak on behalf of them, I know for a fact, are so proud of it and excited about it. Every performance that we do, it's like a whole new, exciting, amazing, almost first-time like experience every single time we do it. And, you know, Joe's music needs to be heard around the world, and I think this show is like exactly what the Broadway community needs right now, and I hope everyone comes to see it in New Jersey.
So from that young little girl and Annie, congratulations, and we expect to hear a lot more from Kelly McIntyre.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
So, Joe, she talked about the cast. Let's talk about the cast. Let's start with your wife.
Yeah, Lauren Marcus. She's pretty good. I like her a lot. Big fan. you know, Lauren is an actor who I was a fan of as an actor before I was a husband of, and so it's just an honor to get to work with her. And what I love about her performance in this show is that it's so different from anything that we've ever done together. You know, a lot of people know her from Be More Chill, where she played Brooke, who is this sort of like, you know, like earthy, you know, kind of like Daffy, second banana character. And Miss Asp, Lauren's character in this musical, is so different. She's, you know, she's sort of, for lack of a better term, the villain of the show, although kind of a tragic villain. It's such a hard part. The whole reason that Lauren ended up getting cast in the role, because the role was pretty different before this production at Two River, was really John Diaz, the artistic director of Two River. It was his idea, saying, "What happens if we put Lauren in this role?" And you know, I had been thinking about the character as much older. I'd been thinking about the character as sort of like more of a twisted, you know, Miss Hannigan kind of thing. And the more we talked about the show, the more it felt like, you know, the show is so much about women and the struggles of women, you know, today and in the 60s and whatever. And it felt like, why does our one adult, you know, female character in the show have to be portrayed as this cartoon? You know, how can we let her be complicated and you know, terrible in a lot of ways, but also show that she's a real person who has suffered in the same way that all of these young women have suffered. And so then we got excited age-wise about making her just sort of slightly older than these kids, you know, and this idea of, you know, Miss Asp is someone who, it's like she was just born a little bit too soon. And she, you know, was sort of really stuck in this kind of 1950s idea of what a woman of a certain age has to be. And she wasn't able to have that for, you know, a few reasons that we talk about in the show. And we see how it's just sort of wrecked her, and how when confronted with these young women who are hellbent on rebellion, how it's just the idea of that just makes her world crumble. And how this idea of young women actually having hope is something that is so upsetting to her, because she just never had that, you know?
When Lauren Marcus comes home and is with Joe Iconis, does the character come up a lot in discussion, or did it in you know, as you were looking into it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm so used to working with people who I'm very close with. And also it's just the way I like to work. I like when I'm working on a show and it overtakes every aspect of my life. And so, you know, I have this group, Iconis and Family, and people always talk about how I collaborate with people over and over again. But really, it's like, you know, I go out of my way to have conversations with people in the show. So there's plenty of actors who who are working on Love and Hate Nation, who I've never worked with before, like Kelly McIntyre or Sydney Farley. And I'm friends with them now because I enjoy having a relationship with the artists who I'm collaborating with. And part of that is just naturally what happens when you want to talk about the characters, when you want to talk about the show outside of, you know, quote unquote office hours. And so, you know, totally, even if we tried to not talk about the show at home, you know, Lauren and I just can't help but talk about it. And also it's like, it's, you know, it's both of our jobs. And what's so funny is that when we're working on a show together, we barely see each other because I'm behind, you know, behind the table on a million meetings and doing a million things that have nothing to do with the actors. She's performing and on the stage and, you know, she has her own things to do before and after the performances that the actors have to do that I don't have to worry about. And so, you know, well, it's this bizarre thing where it's like, oh, we're literally in the same building for, you know, 12 hours. But the first time that we'll see each other is, you know, as we're like both getting into bed at night. How was your day? How was your day? And then, you know, sort of share war stories. So it's a funny, very specific existence to be married to one of your actors.
You've also had a long running relationship with director John Simpkins. I'm going to talk to him, ask you about him in a moment. But anything else that you want to say about the cast?
That they're just incredible, and that, you know, I don't know. I happen to think that our show is pretty great. I like it a lot. I totally understand if other people, you know, don't think it's great. Something I simply refuse to understand is anyone not thinking that every single one of the cast members is not a stinking genius, because it's you just won't find a finer collection of actors, singers, human beings on a stage. The cast is just incredible. They're all stars in their own right. And I'm just so lucky that I get to collaborate with them.
Where were you when you came up with the idea of Love and Hate Nation?
It was sort of an idea that spilled out over the course of a few years. The kernel was this song that I wrote called "I Was a Teenage Delinquent!" That was a standalone song, and it was a love song. And the hook of the song was "I fell in love in juvie hall," and it was a duet between two women. And the premise of the standalone song was sort of two girls who were falling in love in a juvie hall. And the music was like 60s girl group music. And I wrote that song, and I always thought, oh, this could be something bigger. This could be a larger experience. So it was always in the back of my brain. And then I was commissioned by Penn State Musical Theater in 2016 to write a musical. And I could write anything I wanted. It just had to be performable by their senior class. And the senior class was 8 women and 1 guy. And I felt like, oh, this might be a good time to write my female juvie hall musical. And that's sort of how it happened. And I knew I wanted to write something that was a love story. I knew I wanted to write something that really aggressively dealt with 60s girl group pop music. And when I first started writing, it was right around the time of the 2016 election. And I knew I wanted to write something about America and about what was going on in America today, without specifically writing about America in, you know, 2016, 17, 18, 19. And so it just felt like, oh, I could write about America today through the lens of 1962 and a juvie hall for girls. And that's kind of how it came about.
As a 1984 graduate of Penn State, I am thrilled that they asked you to do this. So showing good taste. Mm-hmm. Go Lions.
We are.
We are Penn State indeed. So tell me about this long-running collaboration with John Simpkins.
John Simpkins is my favorite director. He is someone who I met 20 years ago when I was an undergrad at NYU and he was a grad student. And he's directed a few of my shows now. And the collaboration I have with him is, it sort of goes beyond a typical writer-director collaboration. We are really in each other's worlds when we're collaborating. It feels like there are no boundaries, and so in a great way. And so, you know, he's a great dramaturgical director. So we have conversations about the book, about the script, and also have conversations about, you know, directorial things. And it just feels like we're kind of one in the same. And I just love him. He cares so much. He is such an exciting director. He thinks outside the box, but he also is so great at making a musical. He just has musical theater in his bones. And I think you can feel that. And so we have this show that, you know, feels kind of edgy and badly behaved and it's youthful and all those things. But John gives it this sort of classic musical theater structure, you know, in a way that is so helpful and I think so complimentary to my writing. And he's just a really, really wonderful guy. And, you know, I like him because he is someone who is sort of, he's paved his own way in musical theater. He didn't go to a fancy school for directing. He wasn't born into a family of directors. He, you know, sort of came at this world totally from the outside and has really built himself up. And I think that a lot of the people that I work with have that story, which is to say nothing for people who are kind of, you know, born into it. But I just really respond to people who had to fight to get where they are, because I'm the same way. And so, yeah, I think he's the best.
So with that being said, I've heard what you said about what you think people should be thinking about as they leave the theater. So I'll ask you this question. Is that what has been the comment, maybe from a younger person so far, that has touched you most?
I've gotten this comment multiple times in the last, you know, 2 weeks that the show has been running by young people, but it's the same thing. And so many young people say, thank you for writing something where I see myself on the stage. And the thing that's been so moving about that is that invariably all of the young people who say that to me look nothing like each other. It is all different types of people, all different walks of life who feel themselves represented in this show. And I think that it's, you know, I think there are some obvious things about our show that, well, at least they are obvious to me, that, you know, our leading character is a young Black woman. And there just aren't all that many musicals where a young Black woman is allowed to be the center of the story and is allowed to be the romantic lead, is allowed to be the heroine, especially one where the young Black woman is not playing a character who sort of wears their oppression on their sleeve. You know, I think typically when we see a black woman as the lead of a musical, they're playing a certain type of character. And I think that you can think of, if you just sort of think of musicals where there's the Black woman as the lead, I don't need to say the type of characters they typically play. And so I think that's something that I've gotten from a lot of young women of color. We also have a character in the show who is a trans character, who's played by a trans actress. And I've been contacted by so many young trans people who just say thank you for having that in the show and for not making a big deal about it. Like, and that's the other thing. And I think sometimes, you know, as I read reviews and all of that sort of garbage, I wonder, did we make a mistake by not really patting ourselves on the back and by not leading with, look at how great we are, that we've got all of these underrepresented, you know, populations on stage. But I think that just so goes against what the show is and so goes against what we're actually trying to do, which is we're just trying to put people on stage who are representative of the world that we are living in and not make a big deal about it and not have to, you know, have it, you know, be a play that's about the, you know, the plight of a trans woman. It's just a trans woman who's just existing in the show and is allowed to take up space in the way that all of the other, you know, characters are allowed to take up space. And so when young people tell me that they see themselves in the show, it fills me with such unbelievable delight, and I'm never not moved by it.
Two more questions for you, and we'll let you go. Who's responsible for Joe Iconis being so aware of his world around him and other people's sensibilities and other people's thoughts and even women on stage? Who's responsible? Somebody at some point had to tell you what this world's about? Or did you learn it all on your own, Joe?
I think that I learned it from just moving about the world. You know, there's definitely been people who really have specifically spoken to me about, you know, things about issues that hit close to home for people who whose life experiences are different than my own. You know, I think I have always gravitated towards stories about people who feel like they don't fit in or belong for whatever reason. And I think that the more that it becomes inescapable to be an aware human being living in America these days, my writing has really, you know, reflected that. And I see the import of stuff like that. You know, I have a great friend, Shakina Nafak, who's an amazing trans actress, and she's on Transparent, the Transparent finale, and also wrote it. And she's been someone who, over the last few years, has really helped me understand that, you know, things like representation matter. I have a friend, Amara Brady, who's just an all-around actor, writer, what have you. I'm lucky enough to be surrounded with people who can really elegantly and eloquently and articulately speak about how important it is to let people of color and you know, LGBTQ plus people take up space in a musical, in, you know, anywhere. And I just think it's something that's really, really important. And I think that it's important. It's important for I don't think it's important to show everyone how, you know, quote unquote diverse a production is. I don't think it's important for the optics of it. I think it's actually important to the human beings who come to see it. And that's what I'm trying to do.
And in your music, you do that because I've heard you talk about it's not ballads for these leads. We're talking about powerful songs. We're talking about songs that everybody can get into. They're mm-hmm. upbeat and enjoy. And let's face it, good stories are good stories, but a great musical needs great music and great singers. And you've got it here in Love and Hate mm-hmm. Nation.
Thanks. Yeah, you know, I am hardwired to create music that feels alive and electric. I love melody. I think that a catchy melody really helps people understand lyric. I think that a catchy melody is one of the gifts that we have in musical theater, where it's you can take an idea that feels complicated and messy and really big, and you can distill it down to its essence with the help of a melody, and it allows you to be really simple. And I think that I love using music to sort of simplify an idea and to get at the heart of an idea. And you know, and we are so programmed in watching musicals to think like, oh, a serious moment is a slow song. You know, if characters are being serious about something, they must be singing a song that is a ballad that is slow. And I just can't do it. I just can't do it. And I feel like it screws me every time when people watch these shows, because people have to get past this idea of like, oh, just because they're singing Bop Shabop, you know, it doesn't mean that the song isn't about something real. But I just can't do it, because I think that's the reality of life, is that moments when people are in great crisis don't always sound like On My Own from Les Miserables. You know, I think sometimes those moments have energy and confusion and I don't know, whatever to them.
So on a personal side then, from the person who wrote Michael in the Bathroom, mm-hmm. which I think is just about everybody's favorite song that you've ever written, maybe, just because it's a wonderful, wonderful tune and performed. But my daughter Casey and her best friend Amanda saw you at the Talkback, and they told me, you will love Joe. And they were right. Joe, yeah. It's been a pleasure and an honor to talk to you. Continued success in your career.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.